When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Josh Brown, this is a Monday. I'll be in Japan by the time people hear this.
I love the power of technology. Yeah. Where specifically will you be by now? Are you in Osaka or are you in Tokyo?
I will be in Tokyo. It's Monday. Oh, no, if it's exactly Monday, I've not even left the country. So I leave for Japan on Tuesday morning.
Well, this one, take it all back. I think, we're recording all of these on Friday because, of course, you are going on holiday for a few weeks. This one should be going up in, I think, 2 weeks' time. Monday after the Monday that Resident Evil 4 came out.
Because
we have done at this point a Resident Evil ranking, which is very spicy indeed.
I tell you what, in that regard, if we're talking about 2 weeks' time, I might be with Mr. Mario himself in the Super Nintendo world, because that's almost close to when I'm coming back again. I'm lost off, to be honest, but nice Japanese things.
Not what we were going to do the podcast on, but describe to me what Mario World is. Is that what you even just said there?
That's yes. So they've got Super Nintendo World is like Nintendo's foray into theme parks. And so you go in. I've not looked up that much of it because I want to be surprised by what is there. I kind of treat it as spoilers, the amount of different videos people have done.
Right.
Where they do first-person camera walking through it all. I think there's a real-life Mario Kart thing there.
Yeah.
I think there's, I forget what the sort of game things they've adapted, but I know that there's a central area that's made to look like the Mushroom Kingdom with giant boxes you can punch and mushrooms that you can pick up and what are various toadstool-themed things.
Not to turn your lovely, you know, disconnected holiday into a bit of content, but you should absolutely do some shots when you're there.
Oh, God.
Get some stuff filmed. We'll edit it when you're back. I want to see what that stuff looks
I'll
like.
See. What I'm going to do, it's worth saying, because this will be a few weeks in, so it'll be weird at this point if I'm still talking about the fact of going to Japan, having then been in Japan for quite some time. But it is like a weird thing of recording all this stuff on the Friday, the 24th of March, for the next couple of weeks, and then wanting to completely disconnect from the hashtag content and enjoy being in Japan. It's like a big dream trip that I've always wanted to do. But also being aware that it's really, really cool to be there. And I really want to take all the photos and the videos and publish them all, post them all, put them all on Instagram, put them all on TikTok.
Well, I mean,
whatever.
You're taking a break from the content to go to the content capital of the world. So, I mean, you might have done this to yourself.
I might have done. And to be fair, we're going during cherry blossom season, which is one of the most beautiful times of the year when it comes to Japan. And we've booked loads of different things, from the Kirby Cafe to the Final Fantasy Cafe to the Pokemon Cafe to the Super Nintendo world. There's a lot going on, Josh.
Did you get not to just point out maybe the one that you didn't get. Did you get the Studio Ghibli tickets?
No, we
in the
didn't.
End? Oh, I'm so sorry.
No,
to bring
it's
that
cool.
Up.
I'll tell you what. I'm curious whether anyone has been able to get tickets to go to the Studio Ghibli, because there's Studio Ghibli Park and there's a Studio Ghibli Museum, and the park is a bit easier to get to. But the I swear as well, this is the wind up. This is the podcast where it goes out on the Monday. We talk about the ongoing conversations in the gaming industry, the news, and whatever else. But Studio Ghibli, if you want to go there, because of the 9-hour difference, you need to stay up until 1 a.m. UK time, and then just refresh your browser like a madman, and hopefully try and catch one of the slots that's available. The Studio Ghibli server status, the server load, the ability for them to handle the amount of requests that are coming in is absolutely effing terrible. And we tried, because they put up the whole month in advance. I think it was a whole month. So we tried two separate times when they should have been available and just refreshed the page for about 2 hours solid. And even if you managed to get on one of the time slots, it would crash at one of the stages where you're paying for it, or you're trying to identify the pictures that have all the lampposts in, one of those security check things. It was a nightmare, Josh Brown. So no, we tried a lot and we couldn't get in there, but it's okay, because that was more of my wife's thing. At this point, I'm sacking off Studio Ghibli.
You know what?
I'll be in Super Nintendo World.
That's it. You got plenty lined up. You know, next time you go to Japan, you can do the Studio Ghibli stuff.
Hell yeah, we can.
Next time.
Speaking of things we can do, we thought for this particular wind-up, because we were thinking of certain angles that we can do that aren't necessarily, or are more, sorry, more timeless, not necessarily tied to a specific thing. Which is to say that we thought we'd do a conversation about Konami and the fact that they are kind of coming back this year. I'm going to read some quotes and I'll get around to some stuff that is going on with Konami themselves. But the lovely Willie Araya, who's one of the people who always submits stuff for our Untitled Banter podcast each Friday, asked me over on Twitter, would we fancy doing a Metal Gear Solid quiz? And I said, you know me very well, Mr. Willie Araya.
There wasn't an answer to that question that wasn't hell yeah, was there? Really?
Give me a hell yeah. Thank you so much. So absolute massive thank you over to Willie Araya, who put together this Metal Gear Solid quiz. Escalating in challenge. Now, we were initially going to do this with Jules, but we just didn't have that much time. You'll see all the different things that we filmed in person going up across the next couple of weeks. And I just thought, in a way, it's more fun for me and Josh to do a head-to-head because we're both massive Metal Gear nuts anyway.
Well, we're about to find out if we really are.
So this is 12 questions. I think it's three or four levels of difficulty which we go up. The first set is easy enough.
Allegedly.
So we'll see how it goes. So we'll get through these and then we'll get back to Konami stuff and we'll talk about Metal Gear and Konami in general. But first, easier question, in theory.
Come on.
We'll see how you go. What's the name of the island where Metal Gear Solid 1 is set? Now I'm pretty sure I know what that is.
this is the easy question?
You don't know that?
Let's just like, I know the place is called Shadow Moses, but
yeah,
I don't know.
I was going to shoot with Shadow Moses.
I'm going to shoot with Shadow Moses.
We both shoot with Shadow Moses? It was Shadow Moses Island.
That's great.
Which the island is inferred.
I didn't know. I never knew if Shadow Moses was like the facility or the island, but I'm going to assume.
I know that it's in the island. There's something archipelago, because young 9-year-old me had never heard the word archipelago before.
Isn't it great when you get a word like that and then it suddenly you remember where you were when you heard it for the first time? I remember when I first heard the word monotonous. It was in an English class and we were reading a book and I used that for 10 years straight.
Beautiful.
It was the one big word I knew for a long time, so I got monotonous in everywhere, as I'm sure you got archipelago.
You made it monotonous.
In everywhere. I really did.
It was quite poetic. Number two, how many snakes are there? Characters with Snake as a code name and Raiden doesn't count.
Oh, that's a good
That's a really good question.
Question.
In a way, I almost want to collaborate with you on this because it's a conversation anyway.
That's true.
But in my head, I'm thinking Venom Snake, Naked Snake, Solid Snake.
Yeah.
That's it.
Nah, because you've got... Hang on. You got Venom Snake.
Yep.
You've got Solid Snake.
Yep.
You got Solidus Snake.
Oh, of course.
You've got Liquid Snake, like you said.
Oh my god, yeah.
You got does Punish Snake count as someone else?
Punish Snake is Naked, right? No, we don't.
But it's a different technically a different title.
I'm gonna assume that he means the character.
I wanna go with code names. I wanna go five then. I wanna go five.
How many snakes are there? Characters with Snake as a code. Oh, you're right. Characters with Snake as a code name. Characters with Snake as a code name.
Did the boss ever have Snake as a code name?
No.
I'm gonna go five.
Okay,
I'll tell you why. I'll tell you my elaboration of why I'm separating Naked and Punished afterwards. Wait, no. Hang on, I'm going to go back to... we might end up cutting a lot of this out because there's going to be a lot of deliberation. I'm thinking in my head, and I'm going to...
Everyone's playing along at home.
I'm going to let you in on the answer. I'm going to let you in on my reasoning. I'm going to go Venom Snake.
Yep.
Punish Snake.
Okay.
Naked Snake.
Yep.
Solidus Snake.
Yep.
Liquid Snake.
Yep.
Liquid Snake.
Yep.
And Solid Snake. I'm going to go six.
I will go five in that case because I don't think... It is such a semantic thing because it's characters with Snake as a codename. Characters is the numerical part of this, I would assume. I will shoot with five. You will shoot with six. The correct answer is five.
No!
Solid Snake, brackets, Old Snake, Liquid Snake, Solid Snake, Naked Snake, brackets, Big Boss, and Venom Snake.
I'll take it. You know what? I can't complain about that whatsoever.
Undone by Mr. Kojima's marketing a little bit there.
I'm not going to give myself half a point, but I think spiritually I deserve half a point.
So you're keeping track of the scores. I am terrible with numbers. As you'll all find out when you watch our Mastermind Resident Evil quiz. Couldn't for the life of me remember the numbers people were on, but that'll be coming up, I think, next week. We all sort of challenge each other on how much we knew about Resident Evil. Anyway, number three in the Metal Gear quiz is who is the final boss of Metal Gear Rising Revengeance?
Oh!
I know this.
I think I know this. I can't remember his name. It's Senator Armstrong.
Yeah. So we're both shooting with Senator Armstrong.
Senator Armstrong.
Oh, full name given here. So Senator Stephen Armstrong. Brackets, just the surname counts as correct.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely nailing this.
Absolutely.
Okay, now that was just out of the easy portion.
Yeah.
Now we are into the normal normal portion. Name of the firearm used by Solidus Snake and the Frogs unit. So I'm assuming Solidus from Metal Gear Solid 2 and then the Frogs unit is in Metal Gear Solid 4.
Yeah, I think I've got this.
I know the gun itself is a P90.
A P90,
We're shooting with a P90. The FN P90.
I think we get that.
He had no brackets for that. So, I mean, if it was Wilborn rules, it would literally be, I'm only accepting what's written down on the card.
You know what? William Ray might have made these questions, yep, but we're hosting these questions, and I'm going to make an executive decision that I think that counts. You know, colloquially,
okay,
known,
we can both
have the
P90. Number five in the normal category. Name all of the Cobra unit members plus the boss's original code name.
Oh, no way.
That's a brilliant question.
That is a brilliant question. No way am I getting this.
Okay. We're almost collaborating. I said head-to-head, but we're almost collaborating on this.
Yeah.
Because how are you supposed to do it without writing down separate stuff?
That's a good point.
We've got the pain. We've got the sorrow.
Mm-hmm.
We got the fury.
I wouldn't have got this, by the way. So I'm going to give my. I'm not giving myself a point, so I'm passing on
the
this.
Pain, the sorrow,
I got
fury.
Those, but I'm out after that.
The pain, the sorrow, the fury, the end.
Yep.
Who's the... Oh, my God. What was the boss's one?
That's the one I don't know. I really don't know.
She was another the thing.
It's my least played Metal Gear game 3, so I'm going to get all of these wrong.
Well, we both lose this because I can't think of them all five of them anyway.
Reveal. Are you sure you don't want one?
Well,
final
unless I'm
one
correct.
Guess at what the boss was called. Come on.
Maybe I'm correct. Maybe okay, name all the Cobra members plus the original code name. I was thinking there were like five or six of them. The Pain, the Fury, the boss, slash whatever they are. The Pain, the Fury, the Pain, the Fury, the Sorrow, the Fear, that's the other one I couldn't think of.
The Bees.
The Bees Man is the Pain. Or the Pain, the Fury? He's the one, he's the first one you fight.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's whatever I said. But I can't think of what the boss's is. Hers is like the Hope or the Joy or something.
That rings a bell.
I'm going to shoot with the joy. Answer. The pain, the fear, the end, the fury, the sorrow, and the joy.
Did we say the end, though?
I did say the end.
There we go. Okay, I'll give you that.
As a cumulative answer, I said the end the first time when I run them out of my fingers.
That's fine. Okay. No. I'll take it.
You can choose whether that's...
I can't believe you got the joy. That's amazing.
Bending all the rules. I remember there's a really old article that I wrote on how could Metal Gear possibly continue without Hideo Kojima, and I thought we could do Metal Gear Joy. And put joy underneath it.
Nice.
And you do the boss's story.
I'd like that.
Do that. I'd like that as well. I also thought Metal Gear Fox would be cool. Do a Grey Fox game.
I'm surprised they've not done that.
No.
I would play that game.
They love pronouncing Fox as if it was an A instead. Fox. It's great. Number six. How did Solid Snake defeat Big Boss during the Zanzibar Land incident?
Oh.
I know this.
This
is going all the way back to Metal Gear 2.
How did
not Metal Gear Solid 2, Metal Gear
Wait,
2.
How did Big Boss defeat Solid Snake?
How did Solid Snake defeat Big Boss during the Zanzibar Land incident? It's the final boss of Metal Gear 2.
Yeah. And
on,
I
like,
know,
the Famicom or something.
I know at one point he defeated him with a flamethrower.
Yep.
Is that this
game,
though?
You'll probably
though?
Get that. It's like a spray can, and he uses it with a lighter, and he burns him and stuff. Answer. Snake defeated Big Boss with a makeshift flamethrower.
Yeah, I'll take
made
it.
With an aerosol spray and a lighter. I think we're both very good with that. Okay. We are into the hard portion of the quiz. God help anyone who's not a Metal Gear Solid fan, by the way. Who's just sticking around for the Konami news. They just want to know what's happening in the industry. We'll get there.
We'll get there.
Number seven in the hard portion of the quiz. Name the one-word theme for each of the main Metal Gear Solid titles. Metal Gear Solid 1 through 5 and Peace Walker have one.
That's great, that. And I used to be obsessed with this stuff
themes.
Back in the day. Yeah, if we're talking about...
Okay, if you know what this is, I don't think I know what this is.
Man, because it's like number two, yep. Sons of Liberty. Uh-huh. I think that's meme.
Oh,
you know what I mean. So
God, yeah.
Metal Gear Solid 1, I think is Gene. Metal Gear Solid 2, I think is meme. And then I don't know. I only.
I always thought that
two.
Was just Kojima doing his thing on a trailer because he's that when they rotate through and then now it just says his name or something again. Like,
yeah.
I couldn't tell you what they were. We're both going zero for that because I don't know what that
I,
is.
I know. I don't know them all at all. I know Gene and meme, and then I'm
okay.
Out,
okay.
I'm out.
Mean Gene. Through each game, Kojima had a one-word theme, all caps, encapsulating the narrative of each. Those are Metal Gear Solid was Gene, for gene therapy, cloning, defined by your genes, etc. Metal Gear Solid 2 was meme, memes before the internet, lol, ideas passed on through people in generations. Metal Gear Solid 3 was scene, the time and, or S-C-E-N-E.
Right.
The time and place,
was.
Time and place things happen and the impact on them. Metal Gear Solid 4 was sense, the way someone sees the world that is lost when they die, the whole point of Zero and Big Boss's war. That's brilliant. I didn't know you had that going on. Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker was peace, the concept of peace involving real peace and also nuclear deterrence. And Metal Gear Solid 5 was race slash revenge, race being the conflicts and issues caused by differences of race and language, and revenge being about about pain and loss, physical and mental, suffered by Snake and Kaz.
He saw a half-ass that one, didn't you? He was like, all right, there's two for this one. Not the point, Kojima. Not the thing you had established.
It's a Friday. He's trying to cram it. He's off to Japan. He's got things to do. He needs to get it out the way. Number eight in the hard... Sorry, the next question in the hard section, number eight overall. In which year did Metal Gear Solid 3, Peace Walker, and Metal Gear Solid 5 take place?
Ah, oh, that's these are great questions.
These are great
by
questions,
the way.
William Ray. You've absolutely nailed it.
Really, really good. What year did it take place?
I'm quite sure.
I want to go 1968 for this one.
I'm going to go 1964.
Ooh.
It is 1964. I don't know why there's that one, and something else happens in 1973.
You swine.
As you do. Metal Gear Solid 3, Peace Walker. Oh, sorry, Metal Gear Solid 3, Peace Walker, and Metal Gear Solid 5. Yeah, there's a whole thing about Metal Gear Solid 5. 1975 is Ground Zero, so I was wrong anyway with my 1973 thing.
Close, though.
It's close enough. And 1984 for Phantom Pain. Number 9, name the song that the boss AI sings at the climax of Peace Walker and the band that performs it in the game's credits.
Can I tell you a secret?
Please do.
Never finished Peace Walker.
Really?
Played Peace Walker, never finished, wasn't my thing.
Oh.
Played it during the HD collection when I went through 2 and 3.
Oh, that's a bad way to play that game.
Is it
only
really?
Works as a PSP game. That was a lovely little riding on the bus kind of game for me.
Well, here's the issue.
Story's absolute garbage.
Metal Gear Acid burned me on the idea of ever getting a Metal Gear game for PSP.
I love Acid.
I know.
Card-based strategy games, mate.
Ah, not for me. That's like a jump scare for me. Yeah. Imagine young me thinking, oh, I've got this PlayStation Portable, and Metal Gear, my favorite series at the time, is on it. Brilliant. Then it's a card game. Jump scare.
I love you pushing the button to thinking you're going to fire a gun, and you just place the card down. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Why am I doing this?
What is that?
The song that it sings is like this weird, like, child's nursery rhyme thing. It's not Wheels on the Bus, but it's something like that. It's something like Fa Sol La Toby Do kind of thing. It's something like that. You can.
I don't even know. Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star is what I'm going to go.
I think I might be completely... It's actually Sing by the Carpenters.
Oh, completely, completely wrong ballpark.
No idea. Now, we are into the extreme portion of the quiz. Now, if you're in Europe, know that European Extreme was once a difficulty mode in Metal Gear Solid 2, and I think 3 as well.
Yep.
So the 10th question, Dead Cell was the enemy unit team in Metal Gear Solid 2. Name the two members who were cut from the final game.
Ah, that's
I know
great.
One of them.
I don't know.
One of them was Chinaman.
Is that right?
Because it's a very outdated term.
Yeah.
If it was ever even indated. Yeah. But one of them was Chinaman. He was what Vamp became, because he was like this really fast-moving martial arts dude with like a dragon, I think, on his back that came to life.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm pleased he went with Vamp.
Yeah, same. Even though I love martial arts stuff.
There was one more, was there?
There was another who I can't think... I don't know if we're doing half points or anything for this.
I've seen so much behind the scenes stuff from MGS2, and for some reason I've never seen this. Not even in a list. Like we've done so many Metal Gear lists. I've not even seen this in a list.
It's in that document of Metal Gear Solid 2 release they put out, where it's like an official release, and they just go through like everything.
I've seen it years ago. I saw it. I don't know this.
Would you like to shoot with anything in particular?
Absolutely not.
So the answers are Old Boy and Chinaman. Kojima and his name's lol. Elements of Chinaman were incorporated into Vamp's boss fight in Metal Gear Solid 2, and elements of Old Boy were later added to the end in Metal Gear Solid 3.
That's, oh, of course, Old Boy.
Because he's just an old boy.
Makes a lot of sense. I'm going to give you a half a point for that.
Thank you. Number 11, who are Revolver Ocelot's parents? That's very easy.
Is it now?
I'm saying that. I think so.
Is it easy, Scott Tilford?
I think it is.
Is it now? Is one of his parents the boss?
Yes.
And is his other parent the main antagonist of MGS3?
Vulgan.
No, that doesn't sound
I said
right,
that in a way
it?
That lets you know it's not correct.
Yeah, it's not correct.
Do I want to win or not? I don't know.
Is it the Sorrow?
It is.
Oh, yes.
The Sorrow and the Boss revealed in a codec call with Eva in Metal Gear Solid 3. Final question. What does Lale Lule Lo mean and why do people say it?
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The lolly lolly low.
I just thought it was the lolly lolly low. Is it? Oh man, no.
There's a very, very tiny portion of my cerebral cortex that remembers what this is, but I cannot draw from it.
Nah.
It's a. This isn't anything. This is just me doing a Metal Gear stupid knowledge flex, but yeah. I know what Kuwabara means.
What does that mean?
It was in the original reveal trailer for Metal Gear Solid 3, and it's when Volgan walks out onto the drawbridge, and it's in the final game, but he says Kuwabara, Kuwabara. And apparently, and I've never actually looked this up, but apparently in Japanese mythology, when there's a thunderstorm on, a lot of the older generation would tell young kids that if they don't say Kuwabara, Kuwabara, a lightning god will appear and steal their belly buttons.
Interesting.
So you got to make sure you scream it.
I like that.
Keep your belly button.
Yeah.
Keep it in place.
I love my belly button as well. if you
want
to know.
I don't want a thunder god taking that. No. I think that's all yours. I can't even think what this is. I think it's a general expression of something, but I couldn't tell you what it is.
I just thought
it was the vowels rearranged, because it's just A, I, E, U, whatever.
Yeah.
With L's in front of each one.
I want to put it on record.
Yes.
I have no idea what Kojima is ever doing. You know what I mean? ever. I don't even apply logic to it. You ask me what the plot of Death Stranding is, one of my favorite games of all time. No clue, Scott Telford. No clue.
It's where apocalypse is solved with a hug.
Yeah.
You just hug the apocalypse, and the apocalypse is like, yeah, I'm not going to. Nah, I'm all right. But it depends how it goes. I think if you ever cornered Kojima and made him answer stuff, he would still just scratch the record in the corner and run away anyway. So you're never actually going
to
get it.
That's what I want him to do.
It might be what you want.
I really do.
The Lally Lully Low is a system implemented by the Patriots who, via nanomachines, censor. This is a great long answer. Implemented by the Patriots, who via nanomachines censor every instance of a person saying the word Patriot or Patriots. People with Patriots nanomachines will always say it whenever they try to say those words, even if they don't know who or what the Patriots are. The phrase comes from a password used by Zero and Naked Snake during Operation Snake Eater. Who are the Patriots? Lally Lully Low.
Listen, right?
I have no idea which game that's from, but Willy Array
must
does.
Be two, surely, or maybe four, with a lot of bloody ollie exposition in that.
That or Peace Walker. That's the one where it gets really deep.
Very true. What's interesting about that is, are the Patriots idiots? Because there's a little function, my friends, on Twitter called muted words. Just mute the word Patriot. Don't go to all this trouble.
No, just replace it. On Word, find and replace. What are you doing? You're acting a fool. I want to say an unbelievable thank you to Willie Array for putting this together.
That was
absolutely
a lot of fun.
Brilliant. Genuinely, that was some extremely good questions. If anyone else wants to send us in trivia-based quiz stuff, we're going to try and steer full bore into quiz stuff in general. We've got a mastermind set up. We've got buzzers that work. We've got a lighting system thing.
We absolutely do.
We've got all sorts of different things.
Would you like to know what your final score was?
I would. I didn't even think of that. I'm just assuming I did all right.
You got a pretty healthy 8.5.
Get in.
And I got a pretty tragic 5.5.
That's still fine. That's still far more than any people in a 100-mile radius would get on a Metal Gear Solid quiz.
Well,
So we're still the two experts. That's all I'm saying. we're still dominating.
No one can challenge us.
No.
There's two people in this podcast and we're the two experts. No one else is coming in.
No one could possibly get anywhere near us. Now, let's talk a little bit about Konami and stuff in general, because I feel like overall there's been a few people saying, look, it seems like Konami are making a bit of a push to get back into the industry. We had the the TMNT Cowabunga collection last year. We obviously had Shredder's Revenge, which is more of a licensing thing overall. But you did have, or you do have, Dead Cells getting the Castlevania expansion, which just, they're planting all these little seeds, just reminding people of the things they used to be known for, whether it be TMNT, whether it be Castlevania. And also, there was a whole statement at the start of the year that Famitsu wrote up, just way back in January, just saying that Konami overall, and this was part of their New Year's announcement, their mission statement for the year, they said they're planning new games for well-known series with the aim of making even greater strides. In addition, new projects that we have yet to announce to you are also deeply and quietly underway. Please look forward to Konami's future announcements. Speaking of their big games, obviously there was the Silent Hill dedicated live stream last year, which I, at the time, was like, this is kind of cool. Like, even if you're back and forward on Silent Hill or whatever, I still feel like overall a lot of people were like, oh, Konami's doing a thing again.
Yeah.
And it's not just pachinko machines.
Absolutely. Like, I got swept up in the moment of that. I thought all the reveals looked excellent.
Same.
I've kind of soured on it now. Not necessarily soured, but I'm not as optimistic as I was because I realized it's a lot of projects to greenlight.
The time frame's crazy.
The time frame is crazy, and they haven't necessarily proven themselves that they can do any of this right at this moment in time. Yeah, the promise of those Silent Hill games is amazing, and I absolutely want all of them to be incredible return to forms for the entire franchise and to be excellent and to put Silent Hill back on the map in the same way that Resident Evil currently is and Dead Space now is thanks to the remake from EA. But if I'm looking at what Konami has actually accomplished over the last few years, nothing they've done apart from that announcement fills me with the confidence that they can execute on that promise.
No.
And that's kind of what scares me because I like the idea that they are coming back. The intentions are there and the intentions are good, I think. It's just whether they're able to execute it because what have they done in 20 years that indicates they have the ability to pull this off. Again, that's my cynical brain.
I think I'd go back
20
years.
I know maybe that's a bit too far, but
obviously there was all the stuff that happened between Hideo Kojima and Konami. There was the whole tiff that we didn't really get fully detailed, but it was meant to be that some CEO, someone at the top of Konami, was very much sick of how long Kojima was taking to make Metal Gear games. And at some point, it was revealed actually quite recently that Kojima wanted to do an episodic Metal Gear game, which might have cost even more money. It depends on what the level of production was for each particular thing. But for whatever reason, they had some big falling out, and Kojima obviously left Konami quite publicly and everything. But I feel like, you know, it's not like you really, it's only really Metal Gear that was held up back then, because you had Castlevania dove off into all the Lords of Shadow stuff, which has its fans, but I don't think that, you know, if you're a Castlevania fan, you're pointing to Symphony of the Night, you're pointing to the 2D stuff, you're pointing to the general progression of those games, rather than trying to ape God of War kind of thing.
Absolutely.
And so, for me, I think that leading with Castlevania stuff, planting a seed in Dead Cells isn't something that I thought would happen at all. If I think of Dead Cells with it being a roguelike or whatever, I wasn't thinking that's an adjacent Castlevania thing. But they also put was it Alucard and one of the Belmonts in Smash Brothers?
Yeah.
Just little things to sort of remind you of those IP.
Well, the stuff of like getting the Silent Hill characters in like Dead by Daylight. They've had these deals in place for a while, and that's always been cool. I've loved that they've actually let those characters live in other forms and have these kind of crossover appearances.
It's Castlevania just, Netflix as well.
Castlevania
is
Netflix.
Like by far the best animated game thing
outside
of Arkane.
Absolutely. Hopefully, this new Silent Hill movie is going to be good, but I'm just looking at what Konami has put out.
Right.
In over the past like two decades. And honestly, man, I kind of stand by what I said, even though it was just thrown out there, you know.
Two decades takes you back to Metal Gear Solid 3, though.
It does. And I will say that Metal Gear Solid 3 is absolutely, I mean, not Metal Gear Solid 3, Metal Gear as a series is the exception, but it always has been. Like, Kojima had so much control that Konami clearly didn't like by the end of it because he was going over budget or taking too long.
I imagine he's a nightmare to rein in.
Probably, absolutely. The Metal Gear series for me was always an anomaly, but you look at what they were doing with the likes of, I don't know, Pez.
I was going to say all the Pro Evo became eFootball and then they butchered it.
Pro Evo, Castlevania, when they did those kind of like 3D action games, which I know had their fans, but didn't really do that well commercially. You know, they had a bunch of other stuff like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles franchise, which was just kind of like languishing. It had a few games here and there, but not much. Like, they've not made an all-timer game, for my money, outside of the Metal Gear franchise in literally decades at this point. Like, if we're talking, like, really good...
Like, if the bar is Silent Hill 2.
That's it.
Yeah, you know,
because there are other good Silent Hill games that came after Silent Hill, like, the original Team Silent stopped working on them. Like, people have a lot of fondness for Shattered Memories. Downpour has a lot of really interesting elements to it. But when I'm talking about the confidence of them making a great game. I am going back to the likes of, you know, Metal Gear Solid in what that established, and Silent Hill 2, even Silent Hill 3, and stuff like that, for me personally.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Metal Gear, because I feel like that's the one thing missing at the minute. It's like they're planting the Castlevania seeds on Netflix, on different games. They've got the whole Silent Hill dedicated live stream. In terms of Metal Gear, it was rumored that Metal Gear Solid 1 was going to be remade. There was like a weird interview with David Hayter where he said one of his friends told him it was happening, and then nothing came of that in terms of an official announcement. You know, that's kind of all we've had, is this idea of remaking one. And I guess if you're doing the whole mesh the fingers together corporate approach to this, then you want to remind people how good the original was. Remake's very much in vogue. We're recording this on the day Resident Evil 4 comes out.
Yeah.
In Dead Space and Metroid Prime. So it kind of, it's a weird thing, because I'm like, do you put Metal Gear Solid 1 back out? Do you try and update it the same way they've done that with Metal Gear, Resident Evil 4? And do you maybe switch some of the dialogue around? Do you make it less 90s? Does that then mean you lose a lot of the feel of the original Metal Gear? Because even if they do that, Kojima didn't write the Western script for that. Like, obviously, it was translated. I'd never remember the dude's name, but it was translated by one guy. So it's not that sacrilegious to, like, rewrite Metal Gear Solid 1 from Kojima's point of view. If you're worrying about challenging him online, is he going to tweet something or whatever? Maybe you can actually translate it exactly how he wanted it to be.
Right.
And call it the definitive edition. Like, maybe there's a weird way where re-releasing Metal Gear makes the most financial sense for Konami. And weirdly, they do write by Kojima's original script, because he always hated the Western script.
Yeah.
Which I always loved.
It's Metal Gear is an interesting one, isn't it? Because I personally don't want another numbered installment without Kojima's involvement. I think that can just be finished. That said, I do want more Metal Gear games, and I don't even mind if Kojima is involved or not. And what I mean by that is, I would love a remake of MGS1, and I don't need it to be faithful to what Kojima did. Like, right. If he's involved, or some of the people who made that game are involved, that would be great. Kind of like how Silent Hill 2 is being made right now by Bloober Team, but like the original artists are on board to kind of advise it and stuff. To me, so much time has passed that I think you can do a remake of MGS1 in the style of Resident Evil 2. That might not necessarily be the road I would go down, but I think people would accept it more naturally than if we try to do a new numbered sequel. And alongside that, if they have got multiple games in development, I also want to see more spin-offs, not like Survive, but more like Revengeance. Like
Ray
give
Fox.
Us a remake. Yeah, there you go. Give us Metal Gear Fox. Sorry.
Uh-huh.
Give us a remake of Revengeance, or maybe even give us a Revengeance 2. I would love to play
that's
that game.
That's a thing. Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, that's been teased by Quentin Flynn.
Yeah.
Like, there was a whole thing about Metal Gear Rising Revengeance getting remade. I love Revengeance. I was thinking of it, I like it in terms of as a part of the Metal Gear canon. I love it as an action game, but I can take it or leave it as part of Metal Gear. I know it is canon, but I don't really care about them doing more with that necessarily. I would take the numbered sequel. I would take the thing.
Yeah,
because,
really?
Well, because Metal Gear was always more than Kojima. Like, it is held up as a Hideo Kojima game, but there are a lot of staff that always helped him get his ideas over the finish line, whether it be the coders or whoever. I know he snatched up a lot of people to go across to Kojima Productions, but I'm just curious how much, I obviously don't know, but like the specifics of the staff that were left behind who worked with him for 20 years or 20 plus years, do they have it in them to help make another numbered Metal Gear? For me, I would rather they did the bigger risk of trying to continue something or fill in a gap. Like, you do a numbered Metal Gear, but it's Red Dead 2 style, where it actually takes place earlier. I don't know. You just do something that says this has the official stamp of a canon Metal Gear, and then the risk is there, and it's like, can they pull that off? That's exciting. And I'm just curious, and which bits feel like they're Kojima adjacent? Which bits feel like they were, I don't know, can the spirit of it be something? Because, like, you know, be there without him. Because for me, like, when I think about Metal Gear, I think about growing up with it, and it's one of my favorite IPs of all time. When I first went through Metal Gear Solid 4, I didn't like the changes to how it played. I didn't like the whole over-the-shoulder thing. And then then it was a huge wait until Metal Gear Solid 5. And I had to sort of remind myself that I still cared by the time Ground Zeroes and stuff came around. So I'm curious what era of Metal Gear you pull from, whether it's almost more like the top-down ones of the originals. Because they added the third-person camera to 3 when it came to 3DS, and then when it got remastered. So that kind of stuff of, like, what is the perspective you go with?
Yeah.
And, like, you know, how methodical is it stealth-wise? Is it more action-based? Can you run and gun through the whole thing like you could in 4 or 5?
I think I'm just getting caught up on it being a numbered installment. I would not put a mainline Metal Gear games off the cards. I wouldn't take that off the cards. I think, like you said there, you know, there is space for a team to come in and continue that franchise, just not in a completely directly way for me personally, because yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, Kojima spent pretty much his entire life trying to pawn off the mainline Metal Gear games to other people and then always had to come back and step in and actually end up directing them. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of, to me, if I can make a movie comparison, it's kind of like, you know, something like Sam Raimi and the Evil Dead movies. Mm. You know, he's done something similar now where Sam Raimi made three great Evil Dead movies, and Evil Dead movies continue with fresh new talent that's coming in to do mainline installments, but they're not connected to what he established, if that makes sense. Yep. So you've got like the Ash era, and then you've got two other Evil Dead movies that one at least is really great and one's about to come out, and it's they can all coexist, but you couldn't, for my money, do another Ash movie without Sam Raimi involved more hands-on, if that makes sense. Mm. And that's kind of what I think of with Metal Gear and Kojima. Like, you can definitely make a new mainline version. You can maybe even reboot it. You can use some of the characters, but I don't think you could do a Metal Gear Solid 6 and bring back one of the snakes if you didn't have Kojima really involved with it. That's just for me, because I think you would miss something, and I feel like you'd almost be being unfair to the team who have to then release that in the shadow of Kojima's influence and presence, because, you know, even a spin-off like Metal Gear Survive died kind of in part because everyone said, well, it's a Metal Gear without Kojima, we don't want that. Imagine trying to do that with a mainline installment. That's my view on it. I don't even necessarily think it's right, but I don't know.
No, I know what you mean. I think it'll all be in how they show it off. I mean, for me, Metal Gear Survive was like, oh my God, because that was in the worst of that whole Kojima Konami thing. That almost felt personal. It was sort of like the remaining CEOs or the staff, the higher ups at Konami after the Kojima had finally gone, but just like, we're going to take the thing that you love so much and we're going to do a generic zombie loot thing from it, and we're going to charge people for save slots, and we're going to kill this IP.
Yeah.
Because it's like personal. That's how it felt to me. For me, it would be how it would come across, because as soon as we saw that, we knew exactly what it was. It was like this generic zombie game. Versus if you showed good, reliable stealth mechanics, or maybe some cutscene direction that feels Kojima-esque, or maybe there are different cliff notes that are left behind from some of the ideas that the team had that Kojima... I imagine Kojima is very specific on what he wants and doesn't want, and I don't think he's like this, you know, perfect golden specimen. Like, some of the ideas in Death Stranding are ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's like some of the stuff that he wanted to do, which is another part of like the trajectory it went on after Metal Gear Solid 4, was just ridiculous. Just way more magical realism stuff. Like, I don't mind it being reined in a little bit more, potentially. I think proof will be in the pudding, but it'll depend on exactly what they show.
Yeah.
And I'll just, last thing on that is that I don't necessarily need a numbered sequel, but I need a proper timeline sequel. Even if you do Metal Gear Fox or whatever, you could plug stuff into that timeline.
I would agree as well. Like, I would love like a mainline installment that took maybe even some of the characters, maybe almost do like a legacy sequel kind of approach to it. I also agree that, you know, Kojima definitely has his faults. And for me personally, I wouldn't want a team to try to ape what he did, because I don't think it can. You know,
no.
I wouldn't have liked it personally. Say what you will about the Star Wars sequels, but I wouldn't have liked to have seen another team take George Lucas's notes and try to do a George Lucas. At that point, for me, in my opinion, you might as well just try your best to do something new, because you're never going to be that person. You're never going to fully get what they tried to convey in a few notes. Kind of same with Game of Thrones. I'm sure George R. R. Martin left notes for the showrunners of that show, but the later seasons when they don't have actual source material to follow falter because they aren't that right yet. You can take someone's notes, but
gave
you can't
the F up.
Like, you can't execute it exactly like they would. Just, you can't get into someone's mind in that way to fully see their vision.
True.
And I don't think you definitely can't do that with someone like Kojima. I would not like to spend a moment in that man's mind, because it must be a kaleidoscope of ideas and creative avenues.
Yeah, there'd have to be like a specific handover, a specific like, okay, this is where I was. Because Lucas is interesting, because he did have notes for what episode 7, 8, 9 would have been.
Yeah.
And then Bob Iger threw them out and didn't do them. But he had an idea for like a young Han Solo and all these different things that he would have plugged in. I think actually that young Han Solo was the prequel era, but he did have ideas for the future ones as well. But because there's no handover, because it was so volatile, I guess, at the time, it almost felt like Kojima was just sort of kicked out the door or picked up his bags and went, "I'll F you, I'm gone. I'll figure this out later." There is no sort of spiritual way it can carry forward. You're sort of picking up the pieces and reassembling it kind of thing. But yeah, I think the future of Metal Gear is in a way inextricably tied to the future of Konami. Like, it was the IP that put them on the map. Like, Metal Gear changed what gaming even is, like in terms of the cinematic side of it. So there's a lot to live up to. And I just want people to try cool things. And if those cool people that are fundamentally bolted to an IP, at least you can try cool things within that IP. I think the worst way it could go is if is the way the Star Wars sequels did go, where they're just corporatized to death, where it just feels like test audiences, test stuff 101. So I'm curious. But Konami in general, I feel like I've been on the sidelines for so long.
Yes.
I can kind of take or leave them. And I like whatever they are doing, I do respond positively to, but it'll depend what the actual games are.
See, that's the thing. Like, it's another in theory versus in practice thing for me, because the Silent Hill stuff, in theory, great. But you look at the last games they've made with their established franchises, Metal Gear Survivor, I know it was a little while ago, but EVE Football, like that was their last big test, and they failed it like twice.
Yeah,
you know what
very
I mean?
True.
Yeah. Like, that was one of their franchises that was beloved, and they still managed to mess it up.
Oh, and to like a hilarious degree.
Yeah.
Like, that thing didn't have any. That was the most messed up, like faces falling off character stuff since like Unity, like Assassin's Creed Unity. We'll wrap this pod for now. It was just a general talking point on the state of Konami, and hopefully you guys all enjoyed the Metal Gear Solid quiz and stuff. This has been the wind up. I don't even think I said our names. I'm Scott Tilford. That's Josh Brown.
It's always a pleasure, Scott Tilford.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you, and we'll catch you very soon.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.